Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at aches, pains, sprains, and strains today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Before we get into that, though, I want to thank Judith Sears-Poisson for filling in for me while I was gone. I had a lot of fun. We had a little family vacation in Atlanta, and I played golf. Two rounds, 36 holes in one day, and we did some swimming, and...
And are you sore?
No.
Good for you.
Was that swimming trying to find your golf balls, Larry, or swimming on the side?
No, actually, it was a lot of fun. My brother-in-law and his wife have a pool. They belong to a pool, so we had easy access.
It
was 95 degrees, like here.
Yeah.
Right. At the same time.
Yeah. Right. You know, the pool is a great place to go after you've done something like a couple rounds of golf, or maybe you've gone for a run or gone for a bike ride. Just getting in the pool afterwards to move in a sort of unweighted fashion and stretch a little bit and mobilize
cool
your muscles and cool off.
Yeah.
It's a great way to finish off that activity and may help keep you in the game.
Well, actually, and I have to admit, playing 36 holes in one day, I rode. I rode at 96 degrees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the right thing to do.
Heat-related. Are there a lot of heat-related injuries out there?
Oh, yeah. Yes, there are. And, I mean, one of the issues is, you know, we tell people to drink. And it is important to drink, obviously. But there are a couple issues related to that. One is your body can't metabolize or process the amount of fluid that you lose on a hot day. So you certainly have to keep drinking, but realize that even in hot weather, it's still a losing battle overall. So you've got to get out of the sun. You've got to get some shade. You have to get some time out of that heat for part of the day. And if it's not that hot, you have to be careful about overhydrating because you can get ill from overhydrating if it's not that hot.
One of the things that I was told a long time ago when I first started biking long distances was drink before you're thirsty.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, the heat injury can sneak up on people. But that is the idea, just kind of a steady intake as you're biking along or running or walking and
or golfing or whatever.
Whatever it is.
That's right.
Drinking water when you're golfing. My sister used to drive the beer cart on the golf course, and I don't know about drinking a lot of beer being good for you, but yeah, you're right, Larry. Drink before you're thirsty. By the time that signal gets to your brain that you're thirsty, you're already behind the ball.
Yeah. Well, let me give the number. If you'd like to join in, maybe you've got an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain that you want to talk about, or along those lines, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also go to our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question there. And Erica Janik, our very efficient on-air producer, will be there to answer your calls or even look at what you put on the Facebook page.
Right. And, you know, in talking about the heat injuries, too, it's especially important to think about kids because of their body mass to surface area ratio. They tend to get dehydrated faster than adults do.
And they don't pay attention necessarily.
Right.
Are they thirsty or not?
Right. Right, exactly.
Until it could be too late sometimes.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, our daughter, well, she'll soon be 8, but she's playing basketball in a couple of summer leagues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yep, basketball.
Got that water
soccer
bottle right there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, especially
even though she's inside.
You know, the outdoor soccer example, the tournaments where they may play 3 or 4 matches in one day.
Right.
Again, can compound that issue too.
Right. And in terms of, you know, what to drink, water is obviously the most important one, but when you're in those all day tournaments or certainly anything over 90 minutes, you need to replace electrolytes too with a Gatorade, Powerade-ish type solution.
Thing. Well, let's go to Chuck in Bayview and see what's on Chuck's mind. Hi, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good morning. Just when I was asking my question to your producer, I missed what you were saying. And when it came back on, I heard you were saying something about electrolytes. But that's my question, you know, is, you know, how much should I focus on electrolytes? I do a fairly good workout every day, and I drink a lot, but I'm thinking I need to replace electrolytes. However, I need to avoid sugar, and All the electrolyte mixes that I've seen, Gatorade and things like that, are high in sugar or aspartame. Do you have any suggestions for a sugar-free electrolyte replacement, and how much should I focus on that?
Well, you know, the rule of thumb is anything over 90 minutes, you know, endurance activity over 90 minutes. The average American gets enough sodium, potassium in their diet unless you are on a salt-free diet or some type of restrictive diet. Chances are, unless you're working out for more than a couple hours a day, that you're getting sufficient in your diet. In terms of the electrolyte solutions, yeah, they usually have aspartame if they don't have sugar in them. You can make your own, and you can flavor it however you want. I can't remember the ratios off the top of my head, but I bet if you Google it online and look for electrolyte solutions, you'll be able to find a recipe. And you can put in, like, fresh lime or lemon, squeeze fresh lime or lemon into it, and it'll probably taste just fine.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Am I still on the...
Yes, mm-hmm. Sure, go ahead.
Someone said that coconut water is a natural electrolyte replacement. Have you heard anything about that?
I have not heard that. You know, coconut is pretty sweet, so I don't... Usually when you're replacing potassium and sodium. I don't think of coconuts as being particularly high in either of those things. I could be wrong.
Coconut water is not real sweet.
Yeah.
The water itself.
Yeah. I'm not sure. You could probably, again, find out online what the composition of that is.
Yeah.
And the Gatorade Sports Science Institute, if you go, they have a website. If you just Google Gatorade, and you can find a tremendous amount of research on that website on electrolyte solutions, and I'm sure you can find out more about the specific composition. But they have a whole research database on their website that's accessible. Mm-hmm. And it's very good.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. University of Florida came out pretty well on that Gatorade, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did. That was an invention that probably made them a couple of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Bonnie in Winona, Minnesota. It's your turn. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. Say, I'm 49, and I'm a big woman. I weigh just over 200. And I've been doing this Couch to 5K program. And it's working pretty good. You know, I do fine on it. A friend of mine told me that being overweight, a person ought not be jogging until they're a lighter weight because it's too stressful on the joints. And I'm not having any difficulty or pain doing it. So I was just curious about my friend's remark.
That's certainly an interesting comment. Every pound of body weight is 2 to 3 pounds across your knee joint. So the heavier you are, certainly the more load you put on your joints. That being said, some people's joints can tolerate it, some can't. The most important thing is that you train up to that and give your joints time to accommodate to it. I don't know what kind of time frame your Couch to 5K program is, but the slower you take it and the more you mix in walking with jogging, the better off you'll be. The other thing that I'd say about jogging is make sure you have really good shoes whose primary function is cushion. There are some shoes that are designed for control, some that are designed for cushion. Yours should be designed for cushion. If I were you, I would run on a rubberized track if you can at a school, available to school, or a trail that's a dirt trail. I would avoid pavement if I could because that does place more stress on your joints. So I would do everything else I could to minimize the impact on my joints, mix in walking and running, et cetera.
Isn't it actually better to walk a ways than run pretty hard, then walk, and then run? I think it's more efficient in terms of weight loss.
Well, and that can be part of the transition that Lori's talking about is, you know, mixing the walking, the jogging, walking within one session, one exercise time frame. And then over time, you do more jogging than walking. But we've had lots of calls in the past that people have gotten themselves into trouble transitioning too fast or really not transitioning from one level of activity to a much greater level of intensity. And it sounds like Bonnie's tolerating things well, at least to this point.
Yeah.
And the shoes are big, though, and the shoes for cushion in this situation.
And in terms of your comment about walking to jogging or running, as a better way to train. It certainly will encompass more of your physiologic systems, you know, in terms of exercise physiology and the kinds of systems that you train. That being said, for Bonnie, the faster she runs, the more she's going to load her joints. So I'd have her stick with the walking and a jogging and not have her do any kind of fast speed work or anything like that.
Yeah, okay. It sounds like this is a pretty, this is a good program here. I guess it's not so much worrying about your time for that first 5K, but finishing it.
And,
Yeah, that should be the goal of anybody's first race.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, good for you, Bonnie.
Kathy in Duluth, your turn now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I am 58, and 3 months ago, about almost 13 weeks, I had a total hip replacement. And I'm an active person, and I like to bicycle. And I'm kind of, you know, I took the bike out for the first time around the block, you know, and I've been walking. And just wondering how to ease into activities and so I can get back to my normal, you know, level of functioning.
Bill, you want to?
Sure. Kathy, are you under any restrictions right now from the surgeon who did the procedure?
My only restrictions from now on are no squatting and no more than 50 pounds of weight lifting.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like things are healing well, and it sounds like you're tolerating walking really well, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Biking, what's your goal in terms of intensity of biking or a degree of biking?
Well, I'd like to get back up to 30 miles this summer.
Okay.
You know, at least up to 20, you know, 30. And
yeah.
Okay. Are you doing any strengthening at this point in time?
Yeah, I go over to, I tend to go to Curves, and I just do gentle things like that and just some side, you know, lifting my legs sideways and on my side and just kind of gently doing that and the walking. So I'm trying to ease into it that way.
Okay. Sounds like you're in a good plan. And, you know, the testing, the biking, going around the block, and that's a good way to do things. And how do you feel at the end of that? How do you feel the next morning? You know, this is where I think a physical therapist could help you. You don't need lots of visits, but someone who almost is acting as a coach, kind of a manager, as you increase looking to increase the intensity, it also means that your strengthening needs to increase, and flexibility also is important for you.
Mm-hmm.
And just getting some guidance, almost as much of what not to do for strengthening around that hip and the trunk. But you need good trunk stability, and that's where they can help you with. And whether you're doing it at Curves or at home, you know, they can go through a list of things. Again, one, to avoid and protect that hip. And then second, how to progress things so that you don't do too much too fast.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my recommendation.
Yeah, okay. And your hip will generally tell you. But, you know, as Bill said, easing into things slowly, having a good base of strength and mobility, because you're going to need your knee and your spine to compensate for the loss of motion at your hip.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, that they'll work with you on is balance, which is, you know, not so much when you're biking, but when you're on your feet. They should also be providing you some ideas for assessing your balance and then to improve your balance, because that also is an issue for people who've had a surgery like this. And that will help you as you increase your activity level to prevent falls and slips that could maybe get you into trouble down the road.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault is senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the UW Hospitals and Clinic. He also teaches in physical therapy programs at UW-Madison. And Lauritine Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of talking today about how to avoid injuries and kind of keep those aches and pains away. But if you get them, we've got some advice on how to treat them with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lauritine Brody. And join in with your own questions. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or call us. And all our lines are filled right now. Jane in Madison up with a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I'm having a knee issue. I have osteoarthritis in one of my knees. I've had this for quite a while. My problem is that I've had a flare-up again. I have cartilage degeneration on just the inside half of the cartilage. I have a meniscus tear, a small one, a Baker's cyst, And I'm having a lot of stiffness in this knee. It's hard to walk. I like to do walking, and I'm not doing that right now. I have stiffness and pain in the back of my leg, not actually in the knee joint itself. I'm wondering if that's a pretty common thing to happen, to have knee pain or pain in the back of your leg from this kind of injury or condition, and what I can be doing to do as a physical therapy regimen to sort of put off any invasive surgery.
So, Jane, you've had obviously had this diagnosed by a physician. You've had an MRI to diagnose your meniscus tear and medial
yes.
compartment arthritis and Baker's cyst and so on. Okay. And do you know why this flared recently?
No, there's been nothing that has been out of the ordinary. This happened maybe 6 years ago also, and I went through a physical therapy regimen for about 6 weeks, and it was slightly better, and it very slowly subsided, and I can't think of anything that has actually caused it.
Okay. All right. And you're a regular walker, a daily walker?
Yes.
How far?
A couple of miles, but okay. Now I can't, it is way too hard to
okay.
do that.
All right. Well, I would strongly suggest that you get back into physical therapy at this point. 6 years ago, it worked for you. Your knee is now 6 years older, and walking is an important activity for you. It's going to be important for the health of your knee joint. It's going to be important for your overall health, mental, physical, social, emotional, all those things. And given the number of things, you know, you gave me a list of at least three things going on in that knee, and it's going to make it hard to get over that without some help. So I would strongly encourage you to get back into PT and get on a program to get you back on your feet. In the meantime, the weather's nice now. I would really encourage you to get in a pool. And you can get in a pool and you can walk with a limited amount of weight on your leg and keep yourself mobile, keep yourself strong, keep yourself physically active. The leg pain could be referred from your knee. It could be because you've changed the way you're walking because your knee hurts. If you have a Baker's cyst behind your knee, it limits your knee range of motion and can alter your gait. Also puts pressure on some of the muscles in your calf that attach behind your knee. So there are a number of potential explanations for the calf pain, but I'd feel better having you evaluated and have somebody look at that. Are you having swelling in your calf?
I really don't have any swelling or
okay.
heat.
All right. Very good. Yeah, I would encourage you to, A, get in a pool, B, get into PT and get yourself back on track because you have
okay.
a number of factors against you. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
You
all
bet.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Pat in Port Washington, it's on to you now. Hi, Pat.
Yes. Hello. I consider myself a fairly active person, and I used to run quite a bit. I'm in my late 40s now, but in my 20s and 30s, I ran quite a bit, and I wanted to get back into it. Last fall, I started up running, and on my second or third run, my calf tightened up so it was so painful that I had to kind of limp home, and then I gave up running. It slowly felt better, but then this spring I started up again, and I thought I did. A good job of starting off slow. I'd run and then walk a little bit and then run a little bit. Did that several times. But my problem is now I feel good running, except my calf just tightens up just about every time I run.
Where in your calf is it?
It feels like the whole calf muscle.
Okay. And then how long does it take for that tightness to dissipate?
Several days after I run.
Okay.
And I've been stretching it out before I run, or mm-hmm. and I stop halfway through the run and stretch it some more. And
mm-hmm. and any swelling that you notice in your foot or
no.
calf afterwards,
no.
but it just feels tight.
Yep.
Yeah. You need to go in and have this looked at. There are a couple things that cause this kind of sensation in your calf. Vascular, a problem called compartment syndrome, would be high in the list. So you need to have the definitive cause of this figured out. It doesn't sound muscular. It doesn't sound like something that's going to respond to stretching or a strengthening program, but it sounds a little more vascular to me. So I would go in and have some definitive testing to figure out what's causing that.
Mm. Yeah. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. We had an email from Mary in Woodruff. She says, I started riding my bike daily 2 months ago. My lower back has become sore right at the top of my pelvis bone. Should I not do anything for 2 weeks or continue to stretch and do light exercises? I don't want it to get worse.
Right. Yeah. Biking generally is a good thing for people, but right at the top of the hip bones, it's the junction between your pelvis and the lumbar spine. And when we're sitting, biking, if we're flexed forward quite a bit, there's quite a bit of force there. And just the daily activity just kind of wear the muscles down and can cause some stiffness and some pretty significant discomfort. I think backing off some, bed rest certainly is not what you want here, and you don't want to back off too much. I think if Mary could mix some walking with biking, walking more upright, your spine is more of an extended backward bent position versus the slump sitting that often happens with biking. And so mixing some aerobic activity that puts her spine in different positions would be really helpful. The thing that can help with biking and take some pressure off the low back is good hip flexibility, especially the back of the hips. So stretching a knee up toward a shoulder, you know, one leg at a time, then both legs together, and changing the angle. So you pull it up toward the same shoulder, then put it up across body toward the opposite shoulder, gets different muscle groups and part of the hip capsule, also can make a difference. And the other thing is the bike seat, and does the bike fit her or not? And so if she hasn't, maybe taking her bike into a good bike shop and have it make sure that it fits her well also could make a difference for her.
Okay, lots of good tips there. Matt in Red Granite, on to you now. Hi, Matt.
Hi there. I was calling. I was in an accident back in 2008, and I have a hand clinic involved that's scratching their head along with my primary care doctor, but I have a brachial plexus injury that has left my left arm paralyzed, and it now just hangs there. By putting on a sling, it puts too much pressure on my neck. It was my neck was broken two places, my back also in two places. My shoulder was pretty much shattered. Collarbone was broken. I have complete numbness, no feeling, in my left chest up to my ear on the left side of my head. And then also I have some nerve damage on the bottom. Thing is that I'm not cleared for a whole lot of anything yet, and monotony is wearing thin, and I used to be really active. I can't swim because the dead weight of my arm pulls me down to the bottom of a pool. I need to do something because I used to bike, I used to hike, and now it just hurts to even walk, and I need to do something. So I was maybe wondering if there was an idea you could toss my way.
Oh, I can toss an idea your way. While swimming may be out, there are a number of things that you can do in the pool. And the nice thing about the pool is your left arm can be supported by buoyancy. So the weight of the arm is no longer hanging down and pulling on your shoulder and pulling on that brachial plexus. So there are little small foam Velcro things you can put around your wrist or your elbow on the left arm, and it'll just float on the water. And, you know, you can walk, you can sit on a noodle and bicycle, you can put a belt on and cross-country ski with your legs and your right arm. There's all kinds of strengthening you can do for your legs and your core and your right arm in the water. So I think that would be a really good place for you to start and then see how you might transition to some activities on land.
Yeah, that's the idea. If you can start here in the pool, and I agree with Lori, the pool would be a great place for you. And once you start acclimating to that level of activity, then you can do more aerobic in the pool, short of swimming and swimming laps. And hopefully then you can build up enough strength, kind of desensitize the area that's numb or tingling, where then you start tolerating things outside the water as well. But a brachial plexus injury is the nerves come out of the neck and go down into the arm. And whether it's a stretch injury or an injury secondary to a fracture, it can take a long time to heal. And nerves that have been irritated like that, they don't like to be stretched and moved. And yeah. It just makes movement in general really, really difficult.
Right. The last time that I spoke with a specialist, he compared what I deal with to basically like the suicide syndrome, only it's in my arm and instead of my face. And they try to relieve pain a couple different procedures, and nothing has worked. And it almost seems like that would almost make more sense than anything else to really try to get the pressure off it to mm-hmm. begin with and yeah. then mm-hmm. build up to it.
Yeah.
That's right.
There you go. Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Matt. Sherry in Port Wing, it's on to you now. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. To your guests, I have a question. Several years ago, I injured my lower back with a nasty fall. And sometime after the initial injury, I noticed that the muscle right at my waistline in my back going horizontally from the spine off to, you know, towards the side, has bulged out, and it's very hard. And I went to a couple of different doctors, family practitioners. The first one did an x-ray and assured me that it wasn't a tumor. He said, it's just muscle. Don't worry about it. However, ever since then, I have chronic low back and hip and sciatic nerve problems, and I used to be a really avid hiker, and now I'm down to, like, just being able to walk a little bit. I'm scheduled to go back into physical therapy again for the second time this year. And I wondered, what is this with this muscle that they say, don't worry about it? It seems to me that that's what started everything going haywire.
Hmm. Well, my guess is when they say don't worry about it, it's you don't have to worry about a tumor. It's not a tumor, and it's not. It's I'm assuming they ruled out fracture with the plane films or X-rays or anything else they've done for you. So that's where you don't worry about it. But it doesn't mean it can't be causing problems, like you described. Certainly, there could have been a muscle injury at the time of the injury, and you may have some scar tissue in that area. Or you may have sprained some of the deeper joints in the spine, and muscles can knot up in the beginning to protect you. But after a while, that spasm becomes counterproductive. And so when you see a physical therapist, they can help sort it out. Is this primarily a muscle problem, which would direct their treatment in one direction, or is the muscle a secondary problem related to a deeper injury? But their goal will be to start improving your movement, and if they can change your movement pattern, that should allow the muscles to not work so hard and the muscles to soften up a bit. But it sounds like it's been around for a while, and with all the other symptoms you're having down into your leg, their first goal needs to get the pain up out of the leg, up toward the back, before the back typically changes much. But there's specific types of exercises to help promote that, and there's some things a therapist should be doing to help facilitate that for you. But it sounds like it's a good idea you're going back. But you know, when you go in, tell them about your concern about this knot and how long it's been there, and they should help address that for you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in De Pere emailed us to say, my 52-year-old husband's very active playing basketball, tennis, he runs, he skis, recently had hip replacement surgery, and we're wondering what he can do for exercise. Recently had.
Wow, 52, that's the second young person we've had with a hip replacement.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the questions that always comes to my mind with these type of questions is, you know, someone at 52 got a hip replacement, what's the status of their other joints? Do they have sort of a systemic tendency towards degenerative joint disease, and do we need to be thinking about joint protection for the other joints? But in general, the key after something like this is maintaining good strength in the core, that is hips, low back, abdominals, quads, etc. Because the stronger your muscles are, the more they can offload your joints. And that's true whether you've had a joint replacement or you just have arthritis in those joints. You need to maintain good mobility in the spine. Above that joint and the knee below it so that they can compensate and accommodate normal movement. In terms of other activities, swimming is a great activity. Biking is a good activity. You know, in terms of running and impact, that's a question he really needs to pose to his physician, because different physicians have different feelings about whether or not they want their patients going back to impact activities like running, tennis, etc. So I'm not comfortable answering that question. It's really a question between sure. he and his physician.
Yeah, especially if it and it's been recent, she mentioned, mm-hmm. is, you know, our earlier caller who had a total hip replacement, at this stage, 3 months out, she was told she can't squat to get down to the ground, and there are some specific precautions depending on the approach to that hip replacement procedure, and so making sure that they get do's and don'ts from the physician, especially in terms of what to avoid at this point in time, and then working with a therapist to generate the appropriate program for him.
Right. It's not uncommon that people are not referred to physical therapy after a hip replacement. And so when someone is this young and wants to stay active, it makes sense to be followed by a physical therapist who can direct them and sort of coach them through the activities.
Hmm. Another email from another Mary. Lots of Mary's emailing mm-hmm. today on the show, who says or wonders if you could discuss anything you might know about the detrimental side effects of steroid injections to relieve pain in arthritic knees.
Oh, well, I'll start off and then Bill can chime in. I know he has opinions on this. The steroid has a strong, we call, catabolic effect. It beats back the inflammation, but it also breaks down tissue. So, you know, typically we say the judicious use of a cortisone injection into a joint can be helpful because it can kind of beat back some of the inflammation. Those inflammatory cells are unhealthy for the joint surfaces. So if that inflammation is just reeling out of control, they're having a lot of pain, then a cortisone injection to kind of beat things back and then give therapy a chance to work can be useful. Relying on cortisone injections repeatedly to control the pain and inflammation is not the right way to go. So it's not a yes or no question. It's how it's used. So the judicious use, okay. The real Clydesdale in this is going to be the physical therapy. That's what's going to sustain them and help prolong the life of that knee joint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had other callers in the past that have had steroid injections into tendons, and again, it can calm the inflammation down and pain down, but the question is, why did that start up in the first place, and what can we do to make it come back again?
Yeah.
And that's why any kind of injection like this in conjunction with rehabilitation is critical to make sure the healing continues all the way through and then help make sure it doesn't come back again.
And Colleen emailed us from Whitewater. She says, my husband and I are professional window cleaners and work out in the hot sun, and we found that 6 ounces of V8 or a veggie juice is very restorative while working out in the heat. The amount of naturally occurring sodium and potassium in near equal amounts is equal to drinking 8 to 9 Gatorade Powerades without the added sugars or sugar substitutes. So,
great idea.
Not a bad idea at all, and to go along with that earlier caller.
Absolutely. And that should be balanced with water. I'm not sure you can drink enough Gatorade, but I mean V8. But yeah, that's a great suggestion.
Flossie in New Holstein, we go to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I fell down the stairs about, over a month ago. And for about the last 4 weeks, I've been experiencing shoulder pain in my right shoulder, just below the very top of it. It's a dull ache, but anytime I make a movement of trying to lift my arm up, I get a shooting pain, and it's very difficult to even like sleep on it at night. And I'm just wondering how long it's going to last, and if there's anything I should do to help heal it up.
Yeah. Did you land on that side when you went down the stairs, or who knows?
I actually didn't. I mean, I landed fairly hardly on my backside and didn't even really notice any shoulder pain until, you know, a couple weeks after the fall. So I don't even know if it's really attributed to that, but
okay.
it coincides with the fall.
And is this your dominant arm?
Yeah, it's my right arm.
Yeah. Well, you need to go in and have this looked at. There are a number of things that can go wrong. You may simply have a bursitis that got flared up when you fell. You may have torn your rotator cuff. I mean, chances are you were thinking about what was happening and that you were landing on your backside. But right. given that it's your dominant arm, you likely made a sudden movement with that to try to protect yep. yourself in some way. And you could have torn your rotator cuff. So, you know, the symptoms that you have sound pretty rotator cuff-like.
Is that something that'll heal on its own, or?
With the proper rehabilitation, it may. If it's a tendon tear, chances are the tendon isn't going to, it's not going to be restored to its normal state, but it might be good enough for the kinds of things that you do if you have good rehabilitation. So,
I play volleyball once a week in just an adult kind of fun league. Is mm-hmm. that something I should not be doing, or?
I couldn't imagine that you could do it very well.
No, I can't. I mean, it's very casual. I mean, anytime I lift my arm up, I mean, there's pain, like yeah. shooting pain, but I didn't want to, like, damage it any further than it already was.
Yeah, so. I'd probably suggest that you avoid that for now until you know for sure. Because if you do have a partial rotator cuff tear and you dive for a ball and catch yourself or you take a swing at it and miss, you could damage it further.
Yeah, okay. Plus, it'd be one thing if you were calling telling us that you're 25 or 30% better. But the fact you're still as limited as you are and the kind of pain you have with lifting, I think you want to get in pretty quick and just make sure structurally and that rotator cuff is intact for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. thanks for calling. Jim and Rhinelander, we are on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning. I have a question about my foot. I have some pain. It wraps. It's kind of like a C-shaped pain. It's right behind the ball of my foot on the big toe knuckle. And I think I was wearing a really poor pair of boots for too many hours a few weeks back. And I'm wondering about what the proper type of footwear would be and what I should do next. Ibuprofen helps, but I hate to keep using it.
So it's pretty much around that big toe joint, the bottom of your foot?
Yeah, behind it, right in the arch, behind the where the foot narrows down.
Okay.
And it goes up, not back.
I'm sorry, goes up. Which way is up to you?
Yeah, towards the top of my foot.
Okay.
Not down the arch of my foot.
Okay. And this was, how long ago did this start?
Oh, maybe a month ago.
Okay. And is it getting better, worse, staying the same?
It's basically staying the same, but it seems like there's certain types of footwear that make it better and or worse, but I change footwear a lot because I'm out and I'm really active.
And what have you noticed, what footwear makes it better and what really makes it worse?
The better the quality of the boot, it mm-hmm. seems to be stiffer.
Mm-hmm.
I have a really high quality pair of hunting boots that I wear. I have a very weak ankle, so whenever I'm going to be outside for a long time, I wear those, and that seems to be the mm-hmm. best. The cheap pair of tennis shoes are mm-hmm. seems to aggravate it.
And how are you barefoot?
Pardon?
How are you barefoot?
I rarely go barefoot.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, the most likely culprit is arthritis in that first toe joint. It's a joint that's relatively susceptible to arthritis. And if you were spending a lot of time walking in shoes that were really flexible, chances are you could have overloaded that joint. The stiffer the shoe, the more that joint will be supported and less load placed on it. So you kind of solve the mystery yourself by describing your preferred shoe wear. And usually one of the interventions for this is wearing a stiffer-soled shoe. That being said, you want to maintain as much mobility in that joint as possible, and you want to maintain strength around that. So I'd go in and have the scene. It sounds like you're a pretty active person. It's been a month, and it's not really significantly better. I'd go in and have it looked at, make sure that it is arthritis and not a stress fracture, which is unlikely, but it's still on the differential list. And then get some exercises and activities to maintain the mobility of that joint. You don't want it to get any stiffer. It will only get worse. And some strengthening exercises for the intrinsic muscles in your feet.
When you say seen, by a GP or a foot specialist or?
Either one. You could start with your GP. You can go see a podiatrist or foot specialist, but I would get into some therapy to get the exercise and mobilization program for that toe.
All right.
Real good. Thank you much.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics, and Lori Time Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have an email from Jill in Madison who hurt her Achilles tendons while playing tennis a year ago. She's gone to two PTs and a podiatrist. I also wore a boot for 6 weeks. The pain isn't intense. It is uncomfortable, and it is chronic.
Mm-hmm. Well, not knowing Jill's age or what she's done in physical therapy is a little bit of a challenge, but what I would hope, if she hasn't done a fairly intense eccentric program, that's kind of where I'd go. And eccentric is the lowering phase of a muscle contraction. There's the lifting phase and then the lowering phase. And doing a strong, a heavy, almost to the point, or if you really read the literature literally, they would tell you it should be painful. Eccentric program works pretty well for Achilles and patellar tendonitis. If she's done those things and still is nowhere, there is prolotherapy that they're doing for this. And those are the injections of platelet-rich plasma or other substances that help with the sort of neovascularity that produces the pain in this. So if she hasn't done those things, those are a couple options out there for her yet.
Yeah. Okay. On to Adam in Madison. Hi, Adam.
How you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was shadow boxing a couple weeks ago. With, you know, there's no contact. You're just working on your form. And I think I planted my feet. You get a lot of injuries if your feet don't move as you are shadow boxing or boxing or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought a lot of times you'll just be very sore in your upper back and your obliques and things like that because it's such a core exercise. And I thought I'd done something like that because my right side was just really sore. I just kind of tried to work it out like I would any knot in a muscle, just pushing on it, you know, and trying to rub it out. And about a week later, when I was hopping into the shower, I noticed that my whole right side was a series of bruises, and I hadn't, you know, I hadn't actually sparred for a long time, so it wasn't that. I'm wondering if it's possible that I tore something that bled a little bit, like if I tore a part of my oblique or like an intercostal muscle or something.
The answer is yes, and it's probably what that was. Your latissimus dorsi, your lats, also kind of runs from your top of your hip bone up to your shoulder blade and crosses the shoulder joint itself, and that certainly is another muscle soft tissue that you might have injured as well. I'm assuming the bruising is going away.
Yeah, it's pretty much better at this point.
Okay. You know, one thing that what may help you in preventing an injury this again is doing a good stretch of that side, a good lat stretch. I don't know if you ever worked with a foam roller or an exercise ball.
Yep.
Where you can lay on your side, you know, the injured side up, and then you kind of stretch over the top of the ball or that foam roller. And so you can use body weight and gravity, and you can stretch your arm in different directions. And, you know, gentle stretch, kind of think of coaxing, not a real aggressive stretch. But just make sure, you know, whatever tissue you injured in there, that you stretch out adequately. And then I don't know what you're doing for core strengthening. I mean, the shadow boxing is a really good exercise. But if there's other things you're doing in conjunction with that, again, that would probably help prevent an injury from coming back again.
Okay.
But stretching out over a foam roller or an exercise ball could be very helpful.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Ken in Algoma, on to you now. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I'm 68 years old, and my thigh muscles feel like I did 500-meter speed skating. Well, not that.
We get the idea, though.
They just feel so tired, like they've been worked. I don't.
Okay. So, Ken, how long has this been going on?
Oh, maybe last month. Now, I've got a little bit of pain in my right hip, too. And like last night in bed, I sleep on my right side, my right one. And if I turn on the left on my back, it, you know, I have the pain all the time, but I take an Aleve and then it goes away.
Okay. So a month ago, was there any kind of an injury, an accident?
Nope, I wasn't doing anything, no strenuous exercise or anything.
Okay. And any back pain or back problems, nope. Current or in the past?
Nope. It's just that hip now that's bothering me a little bit.
Okay.
And you're not on a statin drug, are you?
Nope.
Okay. Any numbness or tingling? In
nope.
That thigh area below?
No, nope, just feels like it's been worked, you know, it's tired.
Yeah. Well, the tired and tight, I mean, the tightness, that could easily just be a local muscle problem. The tiredness, you worry about vascular or nerves being compressed somewhere, whether it's in your hip area or your back area.
Okay, and I do have vascular problem in my right leg.
Okay.
And I even tried, I have some support stockings that I put on, and that didn't help.
Okay. All right. Have you seen your vascular physician in
no,
the
I
last
haven't.
Month? You know, that's where I would start. If you see the vascular doc and they tell you, nope, it's not vascular, it's other things, then maybe seeing a physical therapist can help examine your hip and see if it's just a matter of needing to strengthen. But, you know, especially with your history, that's where I would start for this.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Susan couldn't stay online, but she was curious about the job market for becoming a physical therapist. She's thinking about it for herself.
Oh, excellent. Well, the job market is really good. With the aging population, baby boomers, et cetera, there are many people in need of physical therapy services. As with any medical profession, there's always a distribution issue. Obviously, there's greater need in rural areas. There's greater need in home care and skilled nursing facilities. But now, one of the things that just personally I appreciate about physical therapy is that it's given me a great deal of flexibility and options in terms of what I do. There are physical yeah. therapists that work with the school system, that work with kids in the school, so they basically follow a school schedule. There are physical therapists who work in home health, who work in pediatrics, who work in the hospital. Bill and I work in outpatient. You can work in sports and orthopedics. You can work in neurology. And so it has a lot of flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the assumption is that the positions are going to remain out there as the population ages. There'll be more and more of a need for rehabilitation and health and wellness and prevention. And so the job from the job market perspective, that should be good for a long time. If she hasn't already, probably the best place to start is if she can do some volunteer work or observe physical therapists at work in different settings. And that will help give her an idea of, yes, this is something that I looks like fun to do mm-hmm. and that I might be interested in doing. And pretty much I think any physical therapy program now requires you to have some physical therapy exposure, X number of hours, even as part of the application process.
Okay, all good tips. Thanks for that question and thanks for your comments. Let's go to Marlene in Racine next. Hi, Marlene.
Hi. I have a question. My husband had a stroke and then he had a slight fall after that. Somehow his right rotator apparently has a tear in it. That arm is also the one that was affected by the stroke, so it's weak to begin with. He's been diagnosed with it but cannot have an MRI due to having a pacemaker. And my question is, will that possibly heal by itself just with exercise?
Well, it won't heal. It depends upon if it was a full thickness tear, a partial thickness tear, et cetera. But many people function very well with either partial or full rotator cuff tears. In fact, when they've done MRIs on people over the decades, they found that, you know, something like 70 or 80% of people in their 70s and 80s have at least a partial rotator cuff tear, and most of them function very well. So other muscles can accommodate and compensate for the rotator cuff tear. The remaining portion of the rotator cuff can be strengthened and do very well. The confounding factor for him is that's his involved side from his stroke. So he's got some challenges that he'll have to overcome there. It depends upon the degree of involvement and his ability to do his rehab. But he can do well with the rotator cuff tear.
Okay, is there an arthroscopic procedure that might be done with that, or is that the main way they do it these days?
That's the main way they do it. Typically, in probably in your husband's age category, they're probably not going to do an acute repair. They generally do acute repairs only in fairly young people who have a high demand on their shoulders yet for many years to come.
Okay.
Chances are your husband isn't going to be in high demand. So if they do a procedure, chances are they're not going to repair, but they're going to go in and they're going to clean up the shoulder and give the remaining rotator cuff a little more room and clean out some of the stuff that's likely to irritate it, and that they can do arthroscopically.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Dot injured her knee out in the garden. Doctor gave her a steroid injection, diagnosed her with the bursitis, pains on the inside of the knee toward the front. I am in a great deal of pain. Any thoughts?
Well, that's not a typical presentation. It may be some prepatellar bursitis. That may be what's going on if she was kneeling a lot in the garden. I'm just speculating as to what went wrong given what the doctor did. But there are bursas in the front of your knee. It's commonly called housemaid's knee because you're on your knees a lot, and that bursa can get swollen and inflamed. So she got a cortisone injection in it. I'm wondering how she responded to that, if it made it better at all. And if it didn't, there's a possibility that you can get an infection. They try not to inject those too much because there is a possibility of infection with that. So if she's still in a lot of pain, I'd probably go back in and have that seen and make sure that everything is okay.
Okay. And Lori and Bill will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to avoid injuries and how to recover from them if they happen anyway, which often happens, unfortunately. Gardening and warm weather sports are great, but of course they can lead to aches and pains or even worse. And when we try to pack many of those activities into just a couple of days, there's a big risk of overusing muscles. And my guest today, physical therapist Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, they're here until 12:30, as I mentioned, to answer your questions when you call us. And you can reach us by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And be sure to visit our Facebook page. Go to The Larry Mueller Show. And if you like the Facebook page, you'll get daily updates on upcoming show topics. Hope you'll stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about aches and pains and sprains and strains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault of the UW. They're physical therapists, and great to have them here. They come by once a month, pretty much, to talk with you and with me, and I'm really glad to have them here and have you listening in. We'll go right to the phones for questions. If you'd like to join us, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And Catherine in Wausau up first with a question. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I appreciate your program. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I have two questions. First of all, I'm in my 60s. I had a right total knee approximately 5 years ago. I'm active. I do yoga, walk, do the gym. I can't do any kneeling. And I, for some time now, I get this pain in the back of my right operative knee. And it's just in the back of my knee. And now it's sort of starting on my left knee in the back. I take one Aleve every day, glucosamine, and an occasional half extra strength Tylenol. And I'm just wondering if I should go back to my surgeon or...
Yeah. How old did you say you were again, Catherine? I missed that. I'm sorry.
60s.
In your 60s?
Yes.
Okay.
But you didn't have this pain behind your knee after surgery? It just came on recently?
Well, I've had it for... a few years now. Yeah, it came after my surgery.
And it hasn't worsened?
No, it's just there. And when I'm exercising, I don't actually notice it. It's more when I'm quiet or just walking.
Okay. And you're starting to notice that same pain in your left?
Right.
And your left has not been replaced?
No.
Okay. Is it limiting your activity at all?
Well, I will take, that's when I take the extra strength Tylenol. I take about a half of that.
Okay. And that's once a day?
A couple, morning and night.
Morning at night. Okay.
But all I take the Aleve once a day and the glucosamine.
Okay. All right. Well, stick with the glucosamine. You know, it's certainly reasonable to go back and see the surgeon again, have him take a look and make sure that there's nothing amiss. I mean, chances are if it's been going on pretty much since your post-operative period and it hasn't progressed and it doesn't bother you when you're active, they're not going to do much about it. But it'd be good to have it looked at, make sure everything is stable. That there's no loosening of any of your components. Take a look at the left knee and see what the status of that is, and perhaps get into some therapy. There might be some specific strengthening exercises that you can do to help with this. Be good to know the status of your left knee if you need to have a strengthening program to kind of slow the progression there or to see what's happening there.
So, with my left knee, a lot of times I get pain in my left knee, and I'm wondering if I should perhaps get a cortisone injection versus Synvisc.
Well, that would be a discussion to have with your physician. But if you're having a little bit of pain that's handled with an Aleve and a couple Tylenol, that doesn't sound like a cortisone injection to me. Sounds more like a Synvisc. So, but you would want your physician to take a look at the status of your joint to see if it makes sense to do a Synvisc. Mm-hmm. Usually the cortisone is reserved for when your knee is really hot and inflamed and painful and you're not functioning, and that doesn't sound like you.
Mm-hmm. No. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. You know, someone else was wondering, we've heard ibuprofen and Aleve and so forth mentioned a few times now. If you do get injured, is it good to take an anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen, or does it make it too easy to think you've recovered when you haven't fully?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Acutely, I would not take it because the anti-inflammatory can interfere with the healing cascade in the initial phases. So I would take Tylenol for the pain at that point. And then down the road, there's no one answer about that. It's a really individual situation that you have to weigh the pros and cons, medical factors, risk factors, et cetera. Usually an over-the-counter won't mask your symptoms enough to allow you to hurt yourself. Right. But whether or not in the big picture it's good to be taking that long term is a discussion that should happen between multiple persons, including the physician, patient.
Yeah, there are other types of pain meds, like narcotics, for example, where you can potentially overdo activity. It could mask symptoms, but I agree with Lori. The over-the-counter nonsteroidals typically won't do that. You know, people who are taking nonsteroidals are thinking of they really should contact their physician. And just to clear it, you know, we can buy it over the counter, they can get people in lots of trouble with their GI system ulcers and kidneys. And it seems pretty benign because you just walk in a drugstore and buy them. Exactly.
Tom in Sturgeon Bay, it's on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
About a month ago, I had a hernia surgery, and everything went great, felt good, no problems since. But I was told, you know, not to lift anything too heavy for about 30 days, and I've done my best to do that, but I'm just getting sort of itching to do more, particularly working out. What can I do lifting weights? Just wondering if there's any advice.
Okay.
Bill. Yeah, my advice would be is, and I'm glad you're off to a good start here post-operatively, but to work really closely with the surgeon. With hernia repair, it's very easy to cause a re-herniation, and that area, the scar tissue in the surgical area, will continue to get stronger for months and months. So ideally, with physicians, they can give you very specific limitations, And then working with a physical therapist, I'm assuming it was either your abdomen or in the groin area where you had the procedure done. And there are certain types of abdominal exercise you would not want to do because it would put too much pressure in that area. There's lots of ways to strengthen your core. So coming in with the specific restrictions, if any, from your from the surgeon, and then working with a physical therapist is really the best and safest way for you to go. You're off to a good start, but it's still only a month yet.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so you think it would be wise to talk to a PT and see if there's specific exercises I could avoid or.
Yes, exactly. Yes, for sure. That's right. So whatever you have from your surgeon in terms of restrictions, any limitations, if you take that to a physical therapist, and then they should be able to give you a good list of do's and don'ts.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Dan in La Crosse up next. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a surgery for plantar fasciitis. Plantar fascia release, and that foot's gotten better, but my other foot is now I have a lateral plantar fasciitis now. It's a seems to be a chronic thing, and I've tried probably most of the conventional things. I had cortisone shots. I've taken steroid dose packs. I ice my foot about four times a day. I do a lot of strengthening and stretching exercises. And the thing that helped it the most is, do you guys know what a BOSU ball is?
Yeah.
I stand on that as a platform and I roll it back and forth in a 360 degree to stretch it. And that, made my podiatrist, decide to postpone surgery on that, for now. But I'm wondering if you guys have any other suggestions, any ideas about what else I might do to help that out? Because it really limits what I can do. I can do more doing the BOSU ball, but it's not an ideal situation yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I presume that you said you've done all the conventional things. You've done have you done night splints?
I'm sorry?
Have you done night splints?
Yeah, night splints don't help.
Okay.
They make it worse.
They make it worse.
Yeah.
Interesting. And what kind of night splints did you try? Did you try the dorsal, the Strasburg sock, the posterior?
I tried the hard cast boot.
Okay.
And then I tried, my sister gave me one that was a little bit less, it was more of a, kind of like a small cast that didn't cover your whole foot.
Okay.
It's, you know, a little gentler.
Okay.
But it just seemed to make it worse. I haven't tried it recently because it doesn't take much to make it
okay.
worse.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like you're doing all the right things. I don't know that I have anything else to offer other than what you've been doing. And I presume since you're working with a podiatrist that they're clear on the diagnosis, that it's not a plantar nerve entrapment or anything like that, and that you've discussed shoe wear and all those
yeah.
factors that you've
yeah.
you've tried all those things. So
I've got form-fit orthotics. I've tried multiple pairs of those, and I wear A6 Kinsey Gel 3s, which seem to be the best
mm-hmm.
shoe for it. I'm sure you're familiar with those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm pretty familiar with all that. I thought.
Yeah. And
you mentioned that that injection in the knee.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they do that sometimes for plantar fasciitis
yes.
as well?
Yes, they do. The platelet-rich yeah. plasma, yes, they do. In fact, there's an ongoing study here at UW. Dr. Kenneth Lee is heading that up. Is doing
okay.
An ongoing research project with PRP
okay.
In plantar fasciitis. So,
okay.
yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to
yes.
keep an eye out for that study then, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something else to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
right,
you bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. I was trying to remember if you ever talked about rolling the foot on an iced
mm-hmm. yeah.
up.
Right,
yeah.
like take a soda bottle,
mm-hmm. soda bottle.
And fill
mm-hmm.
it with water, put it in the freezer,
mm-hmm.
and so you get a combination of the massage and the,
right.
and the cold at the same time.
Yeah.
Can be a good thing.
Yeah, you know, and I just, as he was telling me about the BOSU ball, and I presume he's doing it barefoot. Just in the back of my mind, I kept getting this little rumble about maybe this is the wrong approach of doing the supports, doing the orthotics, doing all those things, and maybe he's one of those people who needs to go the other direction in the sort of barefoot running camp. I mean, I'm not going to have him out barefoot running, but maybe he's someone who would do well spending more time barefoot in controlled conditions. Yeah. I just don't know.
No.
You know, and especially, since nothing else has worked.
Right, especially having tried orthotics and the different footwear.
Well, we have Ken in Verona who wants to visit with you, too, so let's go there. Hi, Ken.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 56 years old. I injured my knee lifting about 8 weeks ago, and I believe I turned it while I had weight on it, and now I have pain on the outer side of the joint, and I notice a small amount of movement or play in the joint, and it does not seem to be healing up. I try to be active a little bit and strengthen it. Been riding bike gently, and I've been managing the pain by just controlling how I move, and I've been taking ibuprofen, but just wondering if you had an input on that.
I'm curious how you know that there's more movement. Tell me about what that means and how you discovered that.
Just by, even if I'm just walking, if I move a certain way or if I tend to rotate, I just feel that there's movement in the joint itself as compared to my other good joint.
Okay. You need to go in and have that looked at and see if that is truly the case. It's possible that you tore a meniscus, which can give you the sensation of instability, or you could have frank instability because you may have torn a ligament in your knee. Do you have pain when you get that sort of feeling, that sensation of it slipping?
Not necessarily. My pain will come if I tend to rotate it, and the pain is very localized. It's like right below the surface of my skin on the outer side.
On the outside, yeah. It could be a meniscus tear. Any swelling?
No, I don't notice swelling.
Yeah. Okay.
And if I'm very careful, I seem to have good strength, and I can do most things. I just
This is something that sounds that. Is that you're a very active individual and you're going to want to preserve the health of that knee for a long time to come. So you need to go in and get a definitive evaluation before you step on it wrong or you make a sudden move and you re-injure it or injure it further. So given your complaint of instability with walking, it needs to be evaluated.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yet another Mary is emailing us and waiting for hip replacement because of painful hip dysplasia, wondering what exercises she could do to get herself stronger for the surgery. So she hasn't had it yet.
Yeah, it's a good idea. The more you can do before the surgery, the better off. Generally, the surgery will go and recovery quicker. You know, at this stage, I think pain is really the guide. We don't want people working through pain that is sharp, catching, shooting, pinching. You're not going to get any gains from exercising into that kind of discomfort. Thinking joint, probably one of the best mediums to get as much strengthening as possible, yet not traumatize the joint any further, is in the pool. I don't know if she has access to a pool of any type. But there she could do a number of the things that Lori has talked about in the past for her aerobically in the water, which also is going to be good for her, as well as trunk core stabilization and local strengthening around that hip. That would be the ideal if she has access to a pool.
Yeah, and if she can go see a physical therapist for a visit or two, they can set her up on some strengthening exercises to do at home, some bridging, some leg raises, just some general things to keep that leg and hip and low back as strong as possible. And again, we've talked before about the importance of spine mobility in the presence of a hip replacement. And so a couple exercises to maintain her spine mobility as well.
Tom in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Seems to be the day for shoulder problems, but I'm experiencing some. I'm 51 years old, been a construction worker all my life. My shoulder, I have no sharp pains in it, but it seems to become severely fatigued. It's kind of strange feeling if I do a lot of overhead motion with it. It just gets terribly tired. And I also have a lot of tightening of my neck muscle. I don't know if that's related or not, but I seem to live with a stiff neck all the time anymore on that side. It seems to be coming up from the shoulder. Is that possible?
It is possible, Tom. So does this fatigue, does it extend down into your arm and hand at all?
Yes, it just like my whole arm becomes terribly fatigued.
Okay. Any numbness or tingling along with this?
A little bit. And also, if I hold my hand on top of my shoulder as I rotate it, there's a lot of grinding, snapping, I mean, just kind of rough compared to the other one.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, your neck certainly is a possibility. And the fatigue, again, as with a previous caller who talked about the tiredness in his case, the legs, you know, we have to think and worry about something vascular, something neurologic. And again, with your neck problems, probably more likely to be something related to nerves coming out of your neck down into the shoulder and arm. How long has this been going on?
Probably a year.
A year, okay. All right, so if it was just a pulled muscle or something, you'd be better by now just with time. Yeah, I'd go in and see your physician and have examined your shoulder, your neck, check for pulses. I mean, they'll do a good thing of checking, you know, the blood flow down into that arm and also the status of your neck and the nerves. But since it's been a year, I'd go in fairly quickly and be seen for this, and so they can make the right diagnosis and then get you back on track again.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And we had an email from Jeff in Brookfield. Been refinishing my living room floor, so I've been spending a lot of time kneeling on the floor. After getting tired when it was hot, I started to flatten my feet, stretching and weakening the front of my ankles. My walking gait is now plodding, and he wonders about strengthening those muscles again, what he could do.
Well, the question is whether he can actually pull his feet back up again, whether he has the ability of his muscles to lift them up, or whether he has a real foot drop. So, yes, you can certainly strengthen them simply by doing exercises where you're sitting and you're pulling your feet and toes up, and you can get elastic bands and do resistance and things, and you can do toe raises, which will also help strengthen those. But if he had a nerve stretch injury to where he can't actively pull them up anymore, that's a more serious condition, and that needs to be seen by his physician.
Let's go to Jill in Suamico next. Jill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have been worked my years as an occupational nurse, and personal was diagnosed with plantar fasciitis, which turned out to be gout. But one of my clients who had to stand all day in a manufacturing job had gone through the conventional treatments, and he found that by me having these thick rubber pads at his workstation and a leaning back like a fisherman's chair that he didn't have to bear weight for 8 hours a day really made the difference. And then as far as the hip person, the swimming like a frog in the water increases your buoyancy and takes the weight that you're bearing on that hip. I personally had knee surgery, but both at the same time, and that was the only thing that could help me stretch out those scar tissue. And last thing I want to say is that in my own experience, I found that physical therapists have control over your treatment plan, and they don't go far enough. You know, they kind of keep you at the same pace, the same type of therapy, even though you've been complaining that it's killing it for you. Okay.
All right. Well, how about if I start with the third one first?
Okay.
And an exercise program should be modified on a regular routine basis. Now, the speed of that is determined by what's the underlying problem and how acute is it, or is it neurologic in nature. But if people are having an inappropriate degree of pain, then the program should be altered. It should be exercise should be changed, intensity should be changed. And once things get easy, then again, the exercises, you know, we spend a lot of time teaching patients how to progress their program and giving them some specific parameters. So So if that's not the case, somebody's working with a physical therapist, then that's something they should talk to the physical therapist about, because there should be some alteration and progression of the program. The first client she mentioned altering the standing, you know, anybody who's doing something for 8 hours, whether it's on your feet or sitting, those little adjustments can make a huge difference, whether it's in your feet, knees, or your back, and something she came with a good idea for that individual.
And then the swimming in the last 10 seconds?
Oh, the swimming, well, for someone who's having a hip replacement, I wouldn't recommend the frog kick because of the position that they're in is too much stress. So, and it tends to also stress your knees. So there's a number of different things you can do in the pool.
Yeah.
That are probably safer for your hip.
And you guys are going to be, you're off in July.
We're off in July. I'm riding my bike across Iowa. Hopefully not getting derailed. Yes, exactly. I may need to take my water wings along, though, I understand.
But you will be back in August. August 15th.
Yes, we will. Look forward to it.
Thank you both for being with us today, and thank you for listening.
Germany took a bold stand 2 weeks ago when it pledged to shut down its nuclear reactors by the year 2022. Isn't it time for America to rethink the benefits and risks of nuclear energy? I'm Jean Faraca. Join us today at 3 here on Earth.
Supporters of WPR include Bach Dancing and Dynamite Society presenting Bach to the Future, a 20th season Bacchanal, June 10th through June 25th at the Overture Center and other locations. Tickets